94.7, the Pulse Monday front page. I had a scattered morning this morning, but it has completely scattered me because I've got 24 hours ahead of myself. Chris Burson is due at 9.30 tomorrow morning, so that'll give you another 24 hours to prepare. And the gentleman who's just rocked up into the studio this morning is, in fact, Bruno Maraca, and he has been on the phone before, but he is going to talk to us today about that very concerning issue, which is long COVID. Bruno, good morning and welcome.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
No, it's good. I do apologise for the mix-up. My brain has been a little bit scattered lately, and maybe it might be due to the fact that I've had COVID and didn't realise it, and I might actually be having brain fog, long COVID right now, which is a major issue.
It is a major issue, and just looking at some of the stats this morning, there's over 900 cases of COVID, not long COVID, but COVID in Geelong alone in the last 7 days.
Yeah, there's certainly a friend of mine contracted it, and we'd been in not physical contact, but we'd been in the vicinity. She rang to say, hey, you better prepare, and I've been careful for the last week, but at this stage, no change to the outcome. But the issue and the concerning issue for me, Bruno, is that the symptoms have been wide and varied in people, some claiming, in the early days, it's just like a cold, and some people have had it like that. Some people have had not had symptoms at all, but have tested positive. So just to be clear, that a thing like long COVID now has become an issue because a lot of people may not even realise that they've been badly affected by COVID, but there's lingering issues.
Well, absolutely. First of all, long COVID's about having COVID symptoms for longer than 12 weeks. And the symptoms do vary and it does depend on the individual. But we're hearing things like everything from fatigue, lethargy, brain fog, chest pain, respiratory issues. So it does vary. I think the theme there is that, just speaking to the Banksia Medical Centre as well, they're looking to open up Torquay Medical Centre very soon as well. Because, again, hospitals and clinics, long COVID clinics, have been inundated with people who are showing symptoms for longer than 12 weeks.
Bruno, I'd been hearing about a new strain in the last few weeks. Is that the one that the 900 cases are? Is this the new strain that's come through?
Not sure. It hasn't defined, but I suppose whether it be the new strain or the old strain, the themes are the same. COVID does impact people, and initially it is infectious. When you move into having it as a long COVID, which is over 12 weeks, whilst infection's not there, the impact on the individual is still significant.
12 weeks for long COVID. I've heard that there are people that have it for years. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's defined as 12 weeks, so it creates a definition between COVID and long COVID. But yep. Absolutely, there are people who have had the condition or the symptoms, if you like, for a year or more. And we speak to people all the time where we're helping them because they're not able to work and we're able to help to alleviate that financial stress they're experiencing. But they, the lethargy, the brain fog, the chest pain, it's just precluding them from functioning on a daily basis.
A couple of things I spoke to you about last week, which have popped up with me. They were concerns way back in 2020, and I suppose the medicos have had a chance to look into it, and in your position, you may as well. But some of the issues regarding changes to people's condition forever, and I mean damage to heart tissue and lung tissue that suggested maybe a COVID. This falls outside of your long COVID of 12 weeks of symptoms, but are there data coming back to suggest that there may be some issues like that?
I think there's a lot more work to be done in this space. I was just chatting to the Stroke Foundation last week, who we do some work with, and essentially it's not conclusive at the moment, and there needs to be a lot more work to be done. But there's some anecdotal feedback to suggest that there's a correlation there between having COVID and stroke, or even a heart disease. But there still needs to be a bit more work to be done there to be able to have that conclusively. But Rob, to your point, I mean, it does impact people differently, and also don't forget people do get COVID perhaps, and they've got other comorbidities. They've got other conditions that are already impacting them. So if someone has a difficulty with respiratory issues and then they get COVID, it becomes a lot more significant for them.
Yeah. And Let's talk about the major purpose of you being in. That's to help people to understand that if they are having issues and it's stopping them from functioning, particularly a major function that's going to work, and particularly, again, if you're on a casual situation rather than a permanent and can't get paid time off, if people are financially disadvantaged, there is a way to find some support.
Yeah, look, Rob, it's interesting. The research says that less than 40% of people are aware they've got personal insurance in their super. Now, personal insurance is really, it's different to your private health insurance. It's actually four types of personal insurance. There's income protection, there's TPD cover, there's death cover, and trauma cover. And they can either be purchased directly through the insurer or through your financial advisor or accountant. But there's a large majority of Australians who have most of that cover as a default cover within their super. So if they're not able to work for reasons such as long COVID, or they may have experienced a stroke or cancer or had an accident that's not work-related, then absolutely that personal insurance is there to support them.
The other issue I had, of course, is, and you mentioned yourself, that there's so much unknown about COVID and unknown about the effects of it. When someone is making a legitimate claim, is it going to be more difficult for them to actually prove their claim and make to be able to properly claim against insurance that they may already have and not realise that you mentioned?
I think there's a point there. If they've got insurance in place today, then the insurer will cover them. So I'll give you an example. If someone is precluded from working because of long COVID and they have income protection, now income protection, the intent of income protection is to replace your income if you're not able to work. And it normally replaces your income up to 75% of your normal income. So if someone has long COVID and they're not able to work, then absolutely that income protection will support them. I mean, it's currently on the insurer's websites that talks to that theme. It's just the insurers perhaps haven't been as proactive, if you like, in getting out on the front foot and in communicating it. But, you know, whether it be long COVID or any other injury or illness, that's what we do. We help people to explore that personal insurance because the insurers aren't telling them at the moment. And that's our job at the minute.
We've got, we're just talking before you come in about the current weather circumstances and flooding, and I know from my recent home and contents insurance policy that arrived 24% more expensive than it was the previous year. The industry must be under an enormous amount of pressure generally, and I know that risks are spread across, not only house and contents across Australia, but I imagine sections of insurance. So I guess insurance companies are going to be fighting hard not to be paying out too much money. And this, to me, exacerbates the problem of the need to be able to prove that you've got issues that have been caused directly by COVID.
Mm. Well, look, there's two themes to that, perhaps, Rob. One, there's a trust deficit in the industry. And what I mean by a trust deficit is there's research that says that almost 50% of members don't believe the insurer is going to pay for them. And that's why we are advocates for clients. We're advocates for clients to help them through those tricky scenarios. The second component that's actually really interesting, and I heard the program on the way in today, and that was just in relation to the flood areas such as Lismore. The University of Sydney did some research and they found a correlation between those people who have experienced floods and other natural disasters and who may also experience mental health illness, such as PTSD, etc., anxiety. So there's a correlation there. So to your point, I think the insurers are bracing themselves for some of those themes. And absolutely, insurance across all categories is under pressure. I mean, insurance is a very simple model, isn't it? More people buy it than unless they pay out, and it works. And as soon as that equation gets shifted, it changes their economics.
The effects on society as well, people unable to work. We know of numerous cases along the Surf Coast where businesses have just not been able to open because they can't get staff. Staff have been unwell. I know personally from the effects internationally, I'm involved in the wool industry and the majority of the wool is processed in China, and China haven't run at full capacity in their processing mills for more than 18 months because of COVID. So it's got all these ripple effects across. Have you guys sort of been in a position to work out the cost to society, because we again talked about the investment before we get a problem compared to dealing with the damage after the problem's happened?
Short answer is no, but you know, it does make it does make a lot of sense that we're seeing the impact quite broadly in both, not only those who are immediately impacted by COVID and not able to work, but also the flow-on impact on, exactly as you're saying, getting suppliers. You know, you go into a restaurant these days, sometimes you have to book and you get there and they're half full, and it's only because they haven't been able to get the staff because they perhaps have got COVID or what have you. So, yeah, we're starting to see that, but I don't have empirical evidence there on the numbers as such.
Do you have much data on who gets long COVID, like age groups, male, female? Is there much info on that?
There was a little bit early, and it was the information we found early was that it was predominantly mainly females, if you like, mid-40s. It didn't matter whether they were already fit and healthy, already had comorbidities, either had other conditions, but that seemed to be a category that was identified early on in the piece, and in northwest Victoria for some reason. But having said that, I think we're starting to see that broaden as well, but certainly those were the early indicators.
Are younger people protected from it?
No. I mean, the Royal Children's Hospital also has a long COVID clinic for children.
So that's a bit of a myth, that one, then, isn't it? Because you hear, that's a general belief out there, I think, isn't it? A lot of people think that, I know I work in schools a lot, and there's a bit of a belief that, you know, they're pretty much bulletproof. Those teenagers that I teach think that anyway.
Yeah, that's not what the evidence is showing. Yep. And I think even, you know, to the point we made earlier, the women in their sort of 40s, et cetera, that's where that cohort initially started. But I think as we're starting to see, and to the point made earlier, there's different variants as well, and it's starting to, perhaps that demography is changing as well.
Do you think, and look, this is just a bit of a random, do you think that there are going to be people who will be permanently impacted by COVID? Their lives will never, they'll never be right again? And I know that sounds a bit extreme, and I don't want anyone, hope doesn't, you know, cause anyone to panic, but do you think that's going to be the case?
It could be the case. It could be the case. I mean, the long COVID clinics that have been set up have multidisciplinary teams involved, so because it does not just impact in a linear way either. Mm. So, you know, there are people who we're helping as well, who have various symptoms, and how those symptoms present, and how those, and also the, I suppose the longevity of those symptoms, it does vary. So, you know, having said that, there are people who have come through the process as well, but you know, you speak to people who have got long COVID today and are in the middle of the major symptoms, not able to work, not able to function on a daily basis, not able to, you know, some of them not even able to get out of bed for a long period of time, you know, just spend an hour out of bed and have to have another lie down. That's significant.
Yeah.
claiming, one of the difficulties for people in the modern age is dealing with computers and dealing online, and so much now is required. You've got to go online to do stuff. The difficulty of making claims, and particularly in the areas you've already topped, that it might be some legalities about it. How can you help out in that area, or assure people that it's not as bad as it might seem?
Well, look, I think whenever someone's injured or ill, they're not at their best. And when you're not at your best, it's really difficult to complete, you know, 18 pages of claim forms, whether it be online or even pen and paper. That's what we do. So we're, as a claim advocacy business, we essentially hold the hand of our client who has the injury or illness and support them through that claim process. So we help them complete the claim forms. We sit down with them, and sometimes it's over the phone, whichever way they prefer, and complete those claim forms. Because when you are at your best, it is difficult. We also have them understand what are the medical reports that are required, what are the other medical evidence that's required to be able to present the claim in the best possible way for the insurer to say, hey, I understand that Jerry's got this policy with us, this is his condition, this is how the condition applies to the policy, let's pay the policy out.
Yeah, it's really concerning for me, because in preparation for some stuff this morning went online, which used to be a daily report, first thing on the news, COVID cases, hospitalisations, COVID deaths. Now, we don't talk about it anymore, you've got to go and find them. But when I went out and found them, it was frightening, the numbers. It was a 22% rise in cases around Geelong recently in Victoria. The deaths this year have been frighteningly high. So as the cases grow, the concerns that we've raised this morning, it's not as if it's finished now and you just deal with the debris. This is a mounting problem day on day on day.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I totally agree. I mean, there's only over 20,000 cases alone, up 3,700 on last week in Victoria. Why? Long COVID. Sorry, COVID. Correction, COVID, not long COVID. So the numbers are significant. There's still an increase in the number of people going to hospital for it. But also, Rob, the other point is every 19 minutes, someone has a stroke in Australia. So we've been on air for close to, someone's had a stroke. I mean, that in itself is significant. There's over 55,000 strokes that occur a year. So to the point you made earlier, how do you actually complete a claim form or online or pen and paper when you've experienced such a, you know, such a condition such as a stroke? We know that we help a lot of people who are stroke survivors, and there's no way that they will be filling in a claim form by themselves, whether it be online or pen and paper. I mean, there's still over, you know, there's still over 400,000 people in Australia who are living with the effects of stroke. Now, that might be that it's impacted their, you know, their dexterity. It might be their speech. It might be a whole host of conditions. So,
if you've got COVID, how much does that increase your likelihood of a stroke?
I don't know. That's the point we made earlier. There's not that evidence that sort of correlates the two. There still needs to be a bit more work done in that space.
Okay.
And the other thing we talked about off air the other day, Bruno, was the period of time when we had lockdowns and people would normally go and have medical checks and didn't. And then if there was a minor problem, it's become a major problem. So I suppose all the numbers and the pressure on the medical system are a little bit confused, I suppose, with that. There was a nothing and then a rush, and was that COVID or natural stuff? And again, you're probably going to need another 12 months of data to get some configuration on that as well.
Well, you're right. And look, that's the data will tell the story in time, but anecdotally we can tell you that we're seeing people with prostate cancer now, for example, and even breast cancer, where the diagnosis is that the Gleason level, for which is how they're measuring the cancer, is quite significant, is quite high. Now, had that been identified earlier, perhaps, then it might have been easier to treat. It still is significant, but easier to treat. But because they haven't had that opportunity. They haven't had that opportunity previously.
And again, we speak a lot on this show and on the show on Saturday morning, the Two Blokes Chatting Show, about men who have traditionally not looked after themselves well. Please go and get these checks, because if you haven't been for a while and COVID has forced you to go or to not go again for a checkup, please go and do it, because these numbers do sneak up, and sometimes very quickly when not checked. Things like bowel cancer, prostate cancer, and just your general heart wellness. I think it's very important to keep checks on all those. So yeah, please do your very, very best to look after yourself and get to your GP as soon as possible. Bruno, how can people make that connection to you to get this assistance if they're sitting listening now? And it may even be opening up ideas in the mind. Well, that explains why I'm feeling like I'm feeling, whatever the case may be. I know I've got insurance in my superannuation. I've missed 3 weeks' work and I'm out of pocket. How do they come back for help from you?
Well, we run a business called AFRM Claims Advocacy, so they can jump on the website there and find us there, or even just drop us a simple email, aca@afrm.com.au. Our process is really simple. We have a conversation and understand whether there's something there that we can help them with. We don't doubt the fact that they're injured or ill, but the key theme there is to really understand their policy and then walk through and suggest to them that if their policy marries up, then there's a claim and we can help them manage that claim for them.
Yeah, I think it's very important. And if you are going through that now, it is an important time to look after yourself. There may be some answers there to solve a few other problems. Question to both of you. Let's take your work hat off, Bruno, and you, Mick, you're in the education department. But some of these things have become election issues, the curse of the lockdown and attacks on our freedoms and the like. But the numbers this year and the numbers that you expressed this morning about what's happened since we've stopped looking after ourselves and each other, it might be that some of that strong government action may seem to have had a pretty positive outcome. If we continue with these numbers in the future and just let this thing go as many say we should, these problems that you're relating are going to become massive. What's your thought about what the future might look like, particularly in your field?
Well, I think our field, just like what we're seeing, we're going to mirror what we're seeing in the medical space at the moment. And what I mean by that is greater pressure on the health system, greater pressure on elective surgery, which will get which will be postponed because they're trying to fill beds with other people who perhaps have COVID and et cetera. So I think there's going to be that what we're seeing in that health service space is going to reflect in the personal insurance space in time. So to the point you've just made, the ripple effect there is as a person doesn't go and have breast screened or prostate screening, then that's going to be picked up at a later time and perhaps it's going to be a lot more significant. So there's a real ripple effect throughout the whole insurance industry, but it really starts with that sort of medical services and health services space.
And of course the pressure on the health system in general and a big one that's been talked about a lot is the ambulance system. And again, I suppose a lot of the ambulance cases will be COVID related at the moment, which is putting that extra stress on. And if we're not doing something about winding that back in, all the other natural issues that take place in society regarding accidents, heart attacks or whatever that do require ambulance, they are going to potentially become deaths rather than an ambulance saving a life.
Well, I don't know that they share those stats, but that would be interesting to know. I know even with something like stroke, time is of the essence. And if someone has a stroke and calling the response unit to come out to support them, to help them take them to hospital, getting in there early is really important. It might actually be the difference between them being able to walk again in the future and speak. So, time's of the essence. So to the point made about ambulance and so forth is really critical.
Yeah, my mother had a stroke 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And 11 minutes was all it took the ambulance to get there from the call. That's in Newtown, which we thought was pretty good. Look, her outcome hasn't been great, but she's 80 years old, so... Mm. And she's got dementia as well, so,
Never easy, though.
No. And a few months back, she tested positive to COVID in the middle of all
right.
that as well. So
yep.
That's why I asked the question before about the COVID and the stroke link.
Yes.
Because I wondered about that. In regards to your question before about the election, the best thing I heard was someone asked recently, they said, how would COVID have gone in Victoria if we hadn't have had any of the lockdowns? Because obviously there was a huge negative response to those lockdowns. Mm. And that's an unknown answer, obviously. But, when you hear people talk, what about all the damage those lockdowns did? I thought, you don't hear many people say, what would have happened if we hadn't have had the lockdowns? How many deaths would we have had and what sort of psychological damage would that have done, et cetera, et cetera?
The graph of cases now, if those cases had been there without a vaccine, I hate to think what it would have been like.
Mm.
Absolutely frightening of what it could have been. So I think this is one of the things you should consider when you're voting. If your reason to vote or change your vote based on the horror of lockdowns, it might be a good idea to just have a little bit of a rethink and a serious analysis about that, because the numbers at the moment are suggesting that that was probably a positive move. Now, you can argue how it was handled. That's all well and good, but I think the intention was to keep us safe, and it's probably done that in a lot of cases.
And I think it's easy to sort of say, well, hey, look, we're all right now, we're all not locked down, but of course we're three vaccines further along than we were back then too.
Yeah,
it was a different world before we had any vaccines, I think.
Definitely, and I should apologise my instinctive behaviour again when I suggested that you should go along, man, and get yourselves checked. But of course, you brought up breast cancer screenings and cervical cancer. A lot of those would not have taken place, and so women in the same boat, please get along to your GP and have those checks if you haven't done them for a while because you haven't been able to.
Really important, Rob, too. And over 20,000 people have breast cancer a year. 95% are female. There is only a small portion of male, but 95% are female. And there's, you know, some really good information online in terms of the National Breast Cancer Foundation as well, in terms of even self-checks as a starting point. And that's something that can be done with breast cancer, which is really important too.
Bruno Marac is the CEO of AFRM Claims Advocacy. You can find them on the Google box, AFRM Claims Advocacy. Get on there, have a look. They may be able to help you out. Bruno, thank you for enlightening us. And it's a subject that we might need to check on you relatively regularly to keep people informed, because I can see this, for all the reasons we've discussed, is not going to be a problem that will go away quickly. And people need to be aware of just check your insurance policies if you've had extended time off work due to all the symptoms that match with long COVID.
Terrific. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed that conversation. We're going to break for the news now when we get back. Michael, you and I might just have a quick look at the education system and other things. And Nick Speak, being that it's Monday, it's sport time, and he's going to come in and join us. And we're going to focus on Wasim Akram today.